For some reason, Polly ended up patrolling with Maledict and Wazza, or, to put it another way, a vampire on the edge and a girl who was possibly so far over it that she'd found a new edge out beyond the horizon. She was changing every day, that was a fact. On the day they'd all joined up, a lifetime ago, she'd been this shivering little waif who flinched at shadows. Now, sometimes, she seemed taller, full of some ethereal certainty, and shadows fled before her. Well, not in actual fact, Polly would admit, but she walked as if they should. And then there had been the miracle of the turkey. That was hard to explain. The three of them had been moving along the cliffs. They'd circled a couple of Slovenian lookout posts, forewarned by the smell of cooking fires, but alas, not by the smell of any coffee. Maledict seemed to be mostly in control, except for a tendency to mutter to himself in letters and numbers, but Polly had stopped that by threatening to hit him with a stick the very next time he did it. They'd reached a cliff edge that gave yet another view of the keep, and once again Polly raised the telescope and scanned the sheer walls and jumbled rocks for any sign of another entrance. "Look down at the river," said Wazza. The circle of view blurred upwards as Polly shifted the scope. When it stopped moving, she saw whiteness. She had to lower the instrument to see what she'd been looking at. "Oh, my," she said. "There's Blouse's secret entrance, right where anyone can see it."
"It'll make sense, though," said Maledict. "And there is a path all along the river, see? There's a couple more women on it."
"Tiny gateway, though," said Polly. "And it'd be so easy to search people for weapons."
"Soldiers couldn't get through, though," said the vampire.
"We could," said Polly, "and we're soldiers, aren't we?" There was a pause before Maledict said,
"Soldiers need weapons. Swords and crossbows get noticed."
"There will be weapons inside," said Wazza. "The Duchess has told me. The castle is full of weapons."
"Did she tell you how to make the enemy let go of them?" said Maledict.
"All right, all right," said Polly quickly. "We ought to tell the Rupert as soon as possible, okay? Let's get back."
"Hold on, I'm the corporal," said Maledict.
"Well?" said Polly. "And?"
"Let's get back," said Maledict.
"Good idea."
She should have listened to the bird song, she realized later. The shrill calls in the distance would have told her the news, if only she'd been calm enough to listen. They hadn't gone more than 30 yards before they saw the soldiers. Someone in the Slovenian army was dangerously clever. He'd realized that the way to spot interlopers was not to march noisily along the beaten paths, but to sneak quietly between the trees. The soldier had a crossbow. It was sheer luck, probably sheer luck, that he was looking the other way when Polly came around a holly bush. She flung herself behind a tree and gestured madly at Maledict further down the path, who had the sense to take cover. Polly drew her sword and held it, clutched to her chest in both hands. She could hear the man. He was some way away, but he was moving toward her. Probably the little lookout they had just found was a regular point on the patrol route. After all, she thought bitterly, it was just the sort of thing some untrained idiots might come across. Maybe a quiet patrol could even surprise them there. She shut her eyes and tried to breathe normally. This was it. This was it. This was it. This was where she found out. What to remember? What to remember? What to remember? When the metal meets the meat, be holding the metal. She could taste metal in her mouth. The man would walk right past her. He'd be alert, but not that alert. A slash would be better than a stab. Yes, a good swipe at head height would kill. Some mother's son, some sister's brother, some lad who'd followed the drum for a shilling and his first new suit. If only she'd been trained, if only she'd had a couple of weeks stabbing straw men until she could believe that all men were made of straw. She froze. Down the angle of the path, still as a tree, head bowed, stood Wazza. As soon as the scout reached Polly's tree, she'd be seen. She'd have to do it now. Perhaps that's why men did it. You didn't do it to save duchesses or countries. You killed the enemy to stop him killing your mates, that they, in turn, might save you. She could hear the cautious tread close to the tree. She raised the sabre, saw the light flash along its edge. A wild turkey rose from the scrub on the other side of the path in one rocketing tower of wings and feathers and echoing noise. Half flying, half running, it bounded off into the woods. There was the thud of a bow and a last squawk.
"Oh, good shot, Rudy," said a voice nearby. "Looks like a big un."
"Did you see that?" said another voice. "Another step and I'd have tripped over it."
Behind her tree, Polly breathed out. A third voice, some way off, called out,
"Let's head back, eh, Corp? The way that went off, the tiger's probably run a mile." "Yeah, and I'm so scared," said the closest voice. "The tiger's behind every tree, right?"
"Okay, let's call it a day. My wife'll cook him a treat."
Gradually, the voices of the soldiers got lost among the trees. Polly lowered the sword. She saw Maledict peer out of his bush and stare at her. She raised a finger to her lips. He nodded. She waited until the bird song had settled down a little before stepping out. Wazza seemed to be lost in thought. Polly took her very carefully by the hand. Quietly, dodging from tree to tree, they headed back to the hollow. Most particularly, Polly and Maledict didn't talk, but they looked one another in the eye once or twice. Of course, a turkey would lie low until a hunter almost trod on it. Of course, that one must have been there all the time, and only lost its bird nerve when the scout crept up. It had been an unusually large bird, one that no hungry soldier could resist, but... well... Since the brain treacherously does not stop thinking just because you want it to, Polly's added, "She said the Duchess could move small things. How small is a thought in the mind of a bird?" Only Jade and Igarina were waiting for them in the hollow. The others had found a better base a mile away, they said. "We found the secret entrance," said Polly quietly as they headed away.
"Can we get in?" said Igarina.
"It's the washerwoman's entrance," said Maledict. "It's right down by the river, but there's a path."
"Washerwomen," said Igor, "but this is a war."
"Clothes still get dirty, I suppose," said Polly.
"Dirtier, I should think," said Maledict. "But are countrywomen washing clothes for the enemy?"
said Igorina, looking shocked.
"If it's that or starve, yes," said Polly. "I saw a woman come out carrying a basket of loaves. They say the keep is full of granaries. Anyway, you sewed up an enemy officer, didn't you?"
"That's different," said Igorina. "We are duty-bound to save our fellow person. Nothing has ever been said about his, their underwear."
"We could get in," said Polly, "if we disguised ourselves as women."
Silence greeted this. Then,
"Disguised?" said Igorina.
"You know what I mean," said Polly.
"As washerwomen?"
said Igorina.
"These are virgins' hands."
"Really? Where did you get them?"
said Maledict. Igorina stuck out her tongue at him.
"Anyway, I don't intend that we should do any washing," said Polly.
"Then what do you intend?"
said Igorina. Polly hesitated.
"You know I want to get my brother out, if he's in there," she said. "And if we could stop the invasion, that would be a good idea."
"That might take extra starch," said Maledict. "I don't want to, you know, spoil the spirit of the moment. But that is a really awful idea. The LT won't agree to something as wild as that."
"No, he won't," said Polly. "But he'll suggest it."
"Hmm," said Blouse a little later. "Washerwomen, is that usual, Sergeant Jackram?"
"Oh, yes, sir. I expect the women in the villages round here do it, just like they did when we held the keep," said Jackram.
"You mean they provide aid and comfort to the enemy? Why?"
"Better than starving, sir. Fact of life. It doesn't always stop at washing, neither."
"Sergeant, there are young men here," snapped Blouse, blushing.
"They'll have to find out about ironing and darning sooner or later, sir," said Jackram innocently.
Blouse opened his mouth. Blouse shut his mouth.
"Tea's up, sir," said Polly.
Tea was an amazingly useful thing. It gave you an excuse to talk to anyone. They settled in what remained of a half-ruined farmhouse. By the look of it, not even patrols bothered to come here. There were no signs of lit fires or even the most temporary occupation. It stank of decay, and half the roof was gone.
"Do the women just come and go, Perks?" said the lieutenant.
"Yes, sir," said Polly. "And I had an idea, sir. Permission to tell you my idea, sir?"
She saw Jackram raise an eyebrow. She was laying it on thick, she had to admit, but time was pressing.
"Please do, Perks," said Blouse. "Else I fear you may explode."
"They could be spies for us, sir. We could even get them to open the gates for us."
"Well done, Private," said Blouse. "I do like a soldier to think."
"Yeah, right," growled Jackram. "'Any sharper and he'll cut hisself, sir. "'They're washerwomen, sir, basically. "'No offence to young Perks, keen lad that he is, "'but your average guard pays attention "'when old Mother Riley tries to open her gates. "'There's not just a pair of gates, neither. "'There's six pairs, and nice little courtyards between them "'for the guards to have a squint at you "'and see if you's a wrong'un, "'and drawbridges, and spiky ceilings "'that drop down if someone doesn't like the look of you. "'Try opening that lot with soapy hands.'
"'I'm afraid the sergeant has a point, Perks,' said Blouse, sadly. "'Well, supposing a couple of women managed to knock out a few guards, sir, "'they could let us in through their little door,' said Polly. "'We might even be able to capture the commander of the fort, sir. "'I bet there's plenty of women in the keep, sir, in the kitchens and so on. "'They could open doors for us.'
"'Oh, come on, Perks,' Jackram began.
"'No, Sergeant, wait,' said Blouse. "'Astonishingly enough, Perks, in your boyish enthusiasm you have, although you haven't realised it, given me a very interesting idea.'
"'Have I, sir?' said Polly, who in her boyish enthusiasm had considered trying to tattoo the idea on Blouse's head. For someone so clever he really was slow.
"'Indeed you have, Perks,' said Blouse, "'because, of course, we only need one washerwoman to get us inside, do we not?'
The quotes sounded promising.
"'Well, yes, sir,' said Polly. "'And if one, as it were, thinks outside of the box, "'the woman does not, in fact, need to be a woman.'
Blouse beamed. Polly allowed her brow to wrinkle in honest puzzlement.
"'Doesn't she, sir?' she said. "'I don't think I quite understand, sir. "'I am perplexed, sir.' "'She could be a man, Perks,' said Blouse, almost exploding with delight. "'One of us, in disguise!'
Polly breathed a sigh of relief. Sergeant Jackram laughed.
"'Bless you, sir, dressing up as a washerwoman is for getting out of places, military rules!'
"'If a man gets inside, he could disable any guards near the door, spy out the situation from a military perspective, and let the rest of the troops in,' said Blouse. "'If this was done at night, men, we could be holding key positions by the morning.'
"'But these aren't men, sir,'
said Jackram. Polly turned. The sergeant was looking right at her, right through her. "'Oh, darn, I mean damn, he knows.'
"'I beg your pardon?'
"'They are my little lads, sir,' Jackram went on, winking at Polly. "'Keen lads, full of mustard, but they ain't ones for cutting throats and stabbing hearts. They signed out to be pikemen in the press, sir, in a proper army.' "'You are my little lads,' I says to em, when I signed em up, "'and I will look after you. "'I can't stand by and let you take em to certain death.'
"'It's my decision to make, Sergeant,' said Blouse. "'We are at the hinge of destiny. "'Who, in the pinch, is not ready to lay down his life for his country?'
"'In a proper stand-up fight, sir, "'not getting beaten over the head by a bunch of nasty men "'for creeping around their fort. "'You know I've never been one for spies and hiding your colours, sir, never.'
"'Sergeant, we have no choice. "'We must take advantage of the tide of fortune.'
"'I know about tides, sir. "'They leave little fish gasping.' "'The sergeant stood up, fists clenching.
"'Your concern for your men does you credit, sergeant, "'but it falls to us.'
"'A famous last stand, sir,' said Jackram.
"'He spat expertly into the fire of the tumble-down hearth.
"'Twell with them, sir. "'That's just a way of dying famous.'
"'Sergeant, your insubordination is getting—'
"'I'll go,' said Polly quietly. Both men stopped, turned, and stared.
"'I'll go,' Polly repeated louder. "'Someone ought to.'
"'Don't be daft, Perks,' snapped Jackram. "'You don't know what's in there. "'You don't know what guards are waiting just inside the door. "'You don't know—'
"'I'll find out then, Sarge, won't I?' said Polly, smiling desperately. "'Maybe I can get to somewhere where you can see and send signals, or—'
"'On this issue, at least, the sergeant and I are of one mind, Perks,' said Blouse. "'Really, Private, it would simply not work. "'Oh, you're brave, certainly, but what makes you think you stand a chance of passing yourself off as a woman?'
"'Well, sir, what?'
"'Your keenness will not go unrecorded, Perks,' said Blouse, smiling. "'But, you know, a good officer keeps an eye on his men, and I have to say that I've noticed in you, in all of you, little habits—' "'Perfectly normal, nothing to worry about, "'like the occasional deep exploration of a nostril, maybe, "'and a tendency to grin after passing wind, "'a natural boyish inclination to—' "'scratch your
It's yourselves in public, that sort of thing. These are the kind of little details that would give you away in a trice and tell any observer that you were a man in women's clothing, believe me.
I'm sure I could pull it off, sir, said Polly weakly. She could sense Jackram's eyes on her. You bloody well know, don't you? How long have you known?
Blouse shook his head. No, they would see through you in a flash. You are a fine bunch of lads, but there is only one man here who'd stand a chance of getting away with it. Manacle?
Yes, sir,
said Shufti, rigid with instant panic. Can you all find me a dress, do you think? Maledict was the first to break the silence.
Sir, are you telling us you're going to try to get in dressed as a woman?
Well, I'm clearly the only one who's had any practice, said Blouse, rubbing his hands together. At my old school, we were in and out of skirts all the time. He looked around at the circle of absolutely expressionless faces.
"Theatricals, you see," he said brightly. "No girls at our boarding school, of course, but we didn't let that stop us. Why, my Lady Sprightly in a comedy of cuckolds is still talked about, I understand, and as for my yum-yum, is Sergeant Jackram all right?"
The sergeant had folded up, but with his face still level with his knees, he managed to croak,
"Old war wounds, sir. Come upon me sudden-like."
"Please help him, Private Igor. Where was I? I can see you all look puzzled, but there's nothing strange about this. Fine old tradition, men dressing up as girls. In the sixth form, the chaps used to do it for their jape all the time." He paused for a moment and added thoughtfully, "Especially Wrigglesworth, for some reason." He shook his head as if dislodging a thought and went on, "Anyway, I have some experience in this field, you see."
"And what would you do if... I mean, when you got in, sir," said Polly. "You won't just have to fool the guards. There'll be other women in there."
"That will not present a problem, Perks," said Blouse. "I shall act in a feminine way, and I have this stage trick, do you see, where I make my voice sound quite high-pitched like this." The falsetto could have scratched glass. "See," he said. "No, if we need a woman, I'm your man."
"Amazing, sir," said Maledict. "For a moment I could have sworn there was a woman in the room."
"And I could certainly find out if there are any other badly guarded entrances," Blouse went on. "Who knows? I might even be able to procure a key off one of the guards by means of feminine wiles. In any case, if things are all clear, I shall send a signal. A towel hanging from a window, perhaps. Something clearly unusual, anyway."
There was some more silence. Several of the squad were staring at the ceiling.
"Yes," said Polly. "I can see you've thought this out carefully, sir."
Blouse sighed. "If only Wrigglesworth were here," he said.
"Why, sir?"
"Amazingly clever chap at laying his hands on a dress, young Wrigglesworth," said the lieutenant. Polly caught Maledict's eye. The vampire made a face and shrugged.
Said Shufti. "Yes, Manacle. I do have a petticoat in my pack, sir."
"Good heavens, why?"
Shufti went red. She hadn't worked out an answer.
"Bandages, sir,"
Igorina cut in smoothly.
"Yes, yes, that's right," said Shufti. I found it in the inn, back in Bloon."
"I asked the lads to acquire any suitable linen they might find, sir, just in case."
"Very sound thinking, that man," said Blouse. "Anyone else got anything?"
"I wouldn't be at all surprised, sir,"
said Igor, staring around the room. Glances were exchanged, packs were unslung. Everyone except Polly and Maledict had something, produced with downcast eyes. A shift, a petticoat, and, in most cases, a dimity scarf, carried out of some sort of residual, unexplainable need.
"You obviously must have thought we'd take serious damage," said Blouse.
"Can't be too careful, sir," said Igorina. She grinned at Polly.
"Of course, I have rather short hair at present," Blouse mused. Polly thought of her ringlets, now lost and probably stroked by Strappy, but desperation spooled through her memory.
"They looked like older women, mostly," she said quickly. "They wore headscarves and wimples. I'm sure Igor can make up something, sir."
"We Igors are very resourceful, sir," Igorina agreed.
She pulled a black leather wallet out of her jacket.
10 minutes with a needle, sir, that's all I'll need."
"Oh, I can do old women wonderfully well," said Blouse.
With a speed that made Lofty jump, he suddenly thrust out both hands, twisted like claws, contorted his face into an expression of mad imbecility, and screeched,
"Oh, dearie me! My poor old feet! Things today aren't like they used to be! Lawks!"
Behind him, Sergeant Jackram put his head in his hands.
"Amazing, sir," said Maledict. "I've never seen a transformation like it."
"Perhaps just a wee bit less old, sir," Polly suggested, although in truth Blouse had reminded her of her Aunt Hattie 2/3 of the way through a glass of sherry.
"You think so?" said Blouse. "Oh, well, if you're really sure."
"And, if you do meet a guard, old women don't usually try to...
"Canoodle,"
cut in Maledict, whose mind had clearly been hurtling down the same horrible slope. "Canoodle with them," Polly added, blushing, and then, after a second's thought, added, "unless she's had a glass of sherry anyway."
"And I do suggest you go and have a save, sir." "Save?" said Blouse.
"Shave, sir," said Polly. "I'll lay out the kit, sir."
"Oh, yes, of course. Don't see many old women with beards, eh? Except my Auntie Parthenope, as I recall. And no one's got a couple of balloons, have they?" asked the lieutenant.
"Why, sir?" said Tonka.
"A big bosom always gets a laugh," said Blouse. He looked around the row of faces. "Not a good idea, perhaps? I got a huge round of applause as the Widow Trembler in Tish Pity She's a Tree."
"No?" "I think Igor could sew something a bit more realistic, sir," said Polly.
"Really? Oh, well, if you really think so," said Blouse dejectedly. "I'll just go and get myself into character."
He disappeared into the building's only other room. After a few seconds, the rest of them heard him reciting, "Lawks, my poor feet!" in varying tones of fingernail screech. The squad went into a huddle.
"What was all that about?" said Tonka.
"He was talking about the theatre," said Maledict.
"What's that?"
"An abomination unto Nuggan, of course," said the vampire.
"It'd take too long to explain, dear child. People pretending to be other people to tell a story in a huge room where the world is a different place. Other people sitting and watching them and eating chocolate. Very, very abominable."
"I would like to eat chocolates in a great big room where the world is a different place," mumbled Lofty sadly.
"I saw a Punch and Judy show in the town once," said Shifty. "Then they dragged the man away, and it became an abomination."
"I remember that," said Polly. Crocodiles should not be seen to eat figures of authority, apparently, although until the puppet show no one in the town knew what a crocodile was. The bit where the clown had beaten his wife has also contravened abomination because he'd used a stick thicker than the regulation 1 inch. "The lieutenant won't last a minute, you know," she said.
"Yes, but he won't listen, will he?" said Igorina. "I'll do the best with my scissors and needle to make a woman of him, but..."
"Igorina, when it's you talking about this sort of thing, some very strange pictures turn up in my head," said Maledict.
"Sorry," said Igorina.
"Can you pray for him, Wazza?" said Polly. "I think we're going to need a miracle here."
Wazza obediently closed her eyes and folded her hands for a moment, and then said shyly,
"I'm afraid she says it will take more than a turkey."
"Wazza," said Polly, "do you really..." Then she stopped, with the bright little face watching her.
"Yes, I do," said Wazza. "I really talk to the Duchess."
"Yeah, well, I used to too," snapped Tonka. "I used to beg her once upon a time. That stupid face just stared and did nothing. She never stopped anything. All that stuff, all that stupid..."
The girl stopped, too many words blocking her brain.
"Anyway, why should she talk to you?"
"Because I listen," said Wazza quietly.
"And what does she say?"
"Sometimes she just cries."
"She cries?"
"Because there are so many things that people want, and she can't give them anything."
Wazza gave them all one of her smiles that lit up the room.
"But everything will be fine when I'm in the right place," she said.
"Well, that's all right then," Polly began, in that cloud of deep embarrassment that Wazza called up within her.
"You're right," said Tonka. "But I'm not praying to anyone, okay? Ever again. I don't like this, Waz. You're a decent kid, but I don't like the way you smile." She stopped.
"Oh, no."
Polly stared at Wazza. Her face was thin and all angles, and the Duchess in the painting had looked, well, like an overfed turbot. But now the smile, the actual smile.
"I'm not putting up with that," Tonka snarled. "You stop that right now, I mean it. You're giving me the creeps. Oz, you stop her, him smiling like that."
"Just calm down, all of you," Polly began.
"Breedingwell, shut up," said Jackram. "A man can't hear himself chew. Look, you're all edgy, that happens. And Wazza here's just got a bit of religion before the fight. That happens too. And what you do is, you save it all up for the enemy. Quieten down. That is what we in the military call an order, okay?"
"Pax," it was Blouse.
"You'd better hurry," said Maledict. "His corset probably wants lacing."
In fact, Blouse was sitting on what remained of a chair.
"Ah, Perks, shave, please," he said.
"Oh, I thought your hand was better, sir."
Yes.
Blouse looked awkward.
"The problem, Perks, is I have never actually shaved myself at all, to be honest. I had a man to do it for me at school, and then, of course, in the army, I shared a batman with Blitherskite, and, those attempts I made on my own behalf have been somewhat bloody. I never really thought about it until I got to plots, and suddenly it was embarrassing."
"Sorry about that, sir," said Polly. It was a strange old world.
"Later on, perhaps you could give me a few tips," Blouse went on. "You keep yourself beautifully shaven, I can't help noticing. General Frock would be pleased. He's very anti-whiskers, they say."
"If you like, sir," said Polly. There was no getting out of it. She made a show of sharpening the razor. Perhaps she could manage it with only a few small cuts.
"Do you think I should have a reddened nose?" said Blouse.
"Probably, sir," said Polly. "Sarge knows about me, I'm sure," she thought. "I know he does. Why is he keeping quiet?"
"Probably, Perks."
"What? Oh, no. Why a red nose, sir?" said Polly, applying the lather with vigour.
"It would look more amusing, perhaps."
"Not sure that's the purpose of the exercise, sir. Now, if you'd just lie back, sir—"
"There's something you should know about young Perks, sir,"
Polly actually yelped. Walking as silently as only a sergeant can, Jackram had stolen into the room.
"Sergeant," said Blouse. "Perks doesn't know how to shave a man, sir," said Jackram. "Give me the razor, Perks."
"Doesn't know how to shave," said Blouse.
"No, sir. Perks lied to us, right, Perks?"
"All right, Sarge, no need to drag it out," sighed Polly. "Lieutenant, I'm—"
"Underage," said Jackram. "Right, Perks? Only 14, aren't you?"
Jackram looked at Polly over the top of the lieutenant's head and winked.
I told a lie to get enlisted, sir, yes," said Polly.
"I don't think a lad like that ought to be dragged into the keep, however game he is," said Jackram. "And I don't think he's the only one, right, Perks?"
"Oh, so that's the game. Blackmail," Polly thought.
"Yes, Sarge," she said wearily.
"Can't have a massacre of little lads, sir, now can we?" said Jackram.
"I see your point, Sergeant," said the lieutenant, as Jackram gently drove the blade down his cheek. "That is a tricky one."
"Best to call it a day, then," said Jackram.
"On the other hand, Sergeant, I do know that you yourself joined up as a child," said Blouse.
The blade stopped moving.
"Well, it was all different in those," Jackram began.
"You were 5 years old, apparently," the lieutenant went on. "You see, when I heard that I'd be meeting you, a legend in the army, of course I had a look at our files so that I could, perhaps, make a few timely jokes in presenting you with your honourable discharge. You know, humorous little reminiscences about times gone by. Imagine how puzzled I was, therefore, to find that you appear to have been drawing actual wages for, well, it was a little hard to be certain, but possibly as much as 60 years.
Polly had put a keen edge on the razor. It rested against the lieutenant's cheek. Polly thought about the murder, though all right, the killing of an escaping prisoner in the woods. "It won't be the first officer I've killed."
"Probably one of them clerical errors, sir," said Jackram coldly.
In the gloomy room, with moss now colonising the walls, the sergeant loomed large. An owl, perched on the chimney, gave a screech. It echoed down into the room.
"In fact, no, Sergeant," said Blouse, apparently oblivious to the razor. "Your package, Sergeant, had been tampered with on numerous occasions, once even by General Frock. He deducted 10 years from your age and signed the change. And he wasn't the only one. Frankly, Sergeant, I'm forced to only one conclusion."
"And what's that, sir?" The razor halted again, still pressed against Blouse's neck.
The silence seemed to last for some time, sharp and drawn out.
"That there was some other man called Jackram," said Blouse slowly, "whose records have got mixed up with yours, and every attempt to sort it out by officers who were not entirely at home with figures only made it more confusing."
The razor started to move again with silky smoothness.
"I think you put your finger right on it, sir," said Jackram.
"I am going to write an explanatory note and add it to the packet," Blouse went on. "It seems to me the sensible thing to do would be to ask you here and now how old you are. How old are you, Sergeant?"
43, sir," said Jackram instantly.
Polly looked up, expecting the generic thunderclap that ought to accompany such a universe-sized untruth.
"Are you sure?" said Blouse.
45, sir. The hardships of a soldier's life shows up on her face, sir."
"Even so. Ah, I'd recall a couple of extra birthdays what had slipped my memory, sir. I'm 47, sir."
Still no rumble of celestial disapproval, Polly noticed.
Yes, very well. After all, you should know, eh, Sergeant? I shall amend it."
"Thank you, sir."
"Just like General Frock did. And Major Galosh. And Colonel Leggin, Sergeant."
"Yes, sir. Clerical error has followed me around all the days of my life, sir. I've been a martyr to it."
Jackram stood back.
"There we are, sir. Face as smooth as a baby's bum. Smooth is how things should be, eh, sir? I've always liked things smooth."
They watched Lieutenant Blouse walk down through the trees to the path. They watched him join the erratic, straggling line of women on their way to the door. They listened for screams and heard none.
"Does any woman sway that much?" said Wazza, peering through the bushes.
"Not legally, I think," said Polly, scanning the keep with the lieutenant's telescope. "Well, we'll just have to wait for some kind of signal that he's okay." Somewhere overhead a buzzard screamed.
"No, they'll have got him the moment he walked through the door," said Maledict. "Bet on it."
They left Jade on watch. With her paint scraped off, a troll could settle into rocky scenery so well that no one was likely to notice her before they walked into her, and by the time they'd walked into her, it was too late. They made their way back through the woods and had almost reached the ruined farmhouse when it happened.
"You are holding up well, Mal," said Polly. "Maybe those acorns did the trick. You haven't mentioned coffee at all."
Maledict stopped and turned slowly. To Polly's horror, his face was suddenly shiny with sweat.
"You had to bring it up, didn't you?" he said hoarsely. "Oh, please, no, I was holding on so tight. I was doing so well."
He fell forward, but managed to get onto his hands and knees. Then he raised his head, and his eyes were glowing red.
"Fetch Igorina," he muttered, gasping. "I know she's ready for this."
Wop, wop, wop. Wazza was praying furiously. Maledict tried to stand up again, fell back onto his knees, and raised his arms imploringly to the sky.
"Get out of here while you can," he mumbled as his teeth visibly lengthened.
There was a shadow, a sense of movement, and the vampire slumped forward, stunned by an 8-ounce sack of coffee beans that had dropped out of a clear sky. Polly arrived at the farmhouse carrying Maledict on her shoulder. She made him as comfortable as possible on some ancient straw, and the squad consulted.
"Do you think we ought to try and take the sack out of his mouth?"
said Shufti nervously.
"I tried, but he fights," said Polly.
"But he's unconscious."
"He still won't let go of it. He's sucking it. I'd swear he was out cold, but he just sort of reached out and grabbed it and bit. It dropped out of a clear sky."
Tonka stared at Wazza.
"The Duchess does room service," she said. "No, she says she didn't.
"You get Freak Rain the fish," said Igorina, kneeling down by Maledict. "I suppose it's possible that a whirlwind tore through a coffee plantation, and then possibly a lightning discharge in the upper ether."
"'At what point did it blow through a factory making small coffee sacks?' said Tonka. "'Ones with jolly turbaned men printed on them, apparently saying, "'Clatchy and rare roasted, when a pickaxe is not enough.'
"'Well, if you're going to put it like that, it does seem a little far-fetched,' Igorina admitted. She stood up, adding, "'I think he'll be fine when he wakes up. "'Possibly a little talkative, though.'